You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
It is a football Wednesday. Vic Carucci and Nathan Zagura with you on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. We are very pleased to welcome into the show right now a regular on our show. She is Mary Kay Cabot. She covers the Browns. You can check out her great work at Cleveland.com, Cleveland Plain Dealer, her Twitter handle at Mary Kay Cabot. How are we doing?
I'm doing great today, guys. How you doing?
Well, a little better than the Browns after Sunday, and a lot of lingering questions from that game. Obviously, Rob Chudzinski heard quite a bit about Brandon Whedon. No shock there. Are you in any way surprised that something didn't change? Because I think there was a sense of a possibility of a shoe falling, or is this kind of playing out the way you thought it would?
You know what? I really didn't expect them to make a change. I didn't really, because coaches usually try not to have hair trigger reactions to things. Over the years, I've noticed that they kind of try to let things settle down a little bit. And, you know, one bad game in a row usually isn't enough to get a guy on the bench.
And it was really only one bad half. I mean, Mary Kay, was I saying things, or did Brandon Whedon not have a pretty good first half?
He did have a pretty good first half. You know, I mean, it started off a little bit slowly, but then once again, you know, he picked it up, and I thought it was very key that they scored 10 points in the final 116 of the first half. So, you know, I think that says something there, that there's growth. But I think what you find is, you know, a team that is a little bit inferior to other teams can hang on up to a certain point, and then the wheels start to come off a little bit. And we've seen that a lot with this Browns team, you know, that they can stay in a game to a certain point. Now, this team is showing some very bad chinks in its armor in the second half of games. I mean, they've been outscored 55-3 in the second half of their losses. And it's, again, it's not just an offensive thing, it's also a defensive thing. And third down is a key issue on both sides of the ball.
What did you take away from the locker room, just to the extent of a lot of questions, taking the pulse of the team, the confidence that may or may not be there from other players in Brandon Whedon? What's your sense of all that?
Well, you know, first of all, we all know that everyone was very excited about Brandon Whedon. We had talked to enough defensive players. You could look into their eyes. And I'm sorry about Brian Hoyer. Mm-hmm. You could look into their eyes and see that there was a new feeling in that locker room when Brian Hoyer was at quarterback.
Renewed.
Yeah. The defense felt like we have a quarterback. We can look out there. And they even said it. They verbalized it. We can look out there and know that we are going to have someone that's going to score points and that can be productive and that they're going to match our intensity and those kind of things. So, I mean, we don't have to pretend that everybody isn't, you know, upset and sad that Brian Hoyer is no longer playing. I think everyone felt that he was going to be able to maybe even take this team to the playoffs this year. And now everyone is kind of, you know, that's basically over. Now, publicly, they're all saying the right things. Even today, Joe Thomas said, you know, we all feel confident that Brandon Whedon will take us to the playoffs. But what else are they going to say right now? I mean, nobody's going to come out on the record and say, you know, we're just not too sure that Brandon Whedon is going to get the job done. You know, we're not going to hear that. But I'm sure in the back of some of their minds, especially after what they saw, with that interception, I'm sure that some people have got to be feeling like, you know, this isn't what we thought it was going to be.
Yeah, and that's the tough part of it, because when you're worried about what the quarterback is or is not doing, it impacts your play on the defensive side of the ball, and we've seen that in the second halves of these games. They've been outscored 55-3 in the second halves of their three losses. So what can this defense do or to try to combat that and try to get over that, I guess? I guess that's the only thing they can do.
Well, you know, one thing that they're going to have to do is they're going to just have to keep getting, they're going to have to keep forcing fumbles and getting interceptions. They have to try to get their hands on passes. They have to try to somehow, they're going to have to try to get the ball back. You know, they've got to get, you know, they've got to get themselves in a situation where they can help this offense. And we can say all we want about the defense, and they did exploit some weaknesses and some mismatches in the defense in this past game. But if your offense is going three and out three straight times and four and out the next time and not staying on the field whatsoever, it's going to affect the defense, not just from a, you know, not just from a production standpoint, but from a psychological standpoint. It is. It's tough to look out there and know that, you know, a minute later, you're going back out onto the football field.
Mary Kay Cabot joins us from Cleveland.com, the Cleveland Plain Dealer. Mary Kay, we talk about this confidence issue and how Brandon Whedon, how teammates view Brandon Whedon, maybe how Brandon views himself, and I guess that's the next phase of this, is do we sense anything there that, you know, as you have observed this guy closely since he joined this team last year, do you see anything that makes you wonder about where his head might be after such a tumultuous game or half?
You know what? I don't know that if we will be able to tell everything we need to know about that until we see him step out on the football field again. You know, we've only seen him, you know, really basically today in the locker room for an interview, and he seemed, what I do believe that he's doing is, I think he's doing a very good job of blocking out the noise. He's been everywhere. I mean, he's been bashed from high, low, and yep, everywhere in between, and I think he's done a good job of blocking that out. I do. I think he's stayed away from everything, and he's been a little bit oblivious to it, and so I think that's good, but what we will see is, you know, how it affects him when he gets out onto the football field. This is a gunslinger type of guy. You know, will he continue to be, you know, slinging it around, or does he have so many things in his head that, you know, he starts to play tentatively, or does he try to do too much? This past game, he tried to do too much in the clutch. You know, he has a tendency to get, he overthrows when he gets too hyped up. We've seen that consistently over his how many ever starts, you know, 18 starts or whatever the case is. You know, he has to stay within himself and stay calm, and it remains to be seen if he can do that.
What can the Browns do to get this ground game going? Because it's one thing to say you want to commit to the run. It's another thing to be able to do it effectively. And you look at Willis McGahee this year since coming here, he's averaging 2.8 yards per carry, only 1.7 of those coming after contact. That means he's taking contact on average 1.1 yards after he takes the ball. That's tough to produce in such a situation unless you're a guy like Adrian Peterson who's going to get 3.5 yards after contact. We hear this talk. Rob Chudzinski alluded to it in his press conference, saying, you know, we might have to deviate from what was our traditional game plan a little bit more and establish the run. Can the Browns do that against the Green Bay Packers?
Well, you know what? They're a very, very good run defense, so it's not going to be easy. But what I think the Browns have been doing and will continue to need to do is to find other ways to get the ground game accomplished. And they have been doing that with, you know, they've been using gimmicks. But sometimes you need to use smoke and mirrors to get the job accomplished. So you're seeing end arounds. And the one to Josh Gordon would have been you know, could have gone somewhere, but there was a missed block on that one. So you have to execute them properly. You know, so, you know, trying to use Travis Benjamin, Josh Gordon here and there on an end around is fine. You know what? Why not try a little bit more of the Wildcat here and there? I think they're going to need to do things like this and, you know, get Obi the ball a little bit more at times. You know, I mean, I think he started to do some good things in the game. So, and I think each week that you'll see Willis come around a little bit more. It takes a while to get acclimated to the line, to get your sea legs back, and all those kind of things.
Is this a good enough run blocking line, though, ultimately, to be able to establish no matter who's back there?
Yeah, see, I don't think it is.
I'm not
consistently
sure,
but I think they showed in that first half of the Detroit game that they can play when they play at the, when it's full out dedication to just doing that, and when they get in that groove, obviously they're capable of doing it. Whether they can sustain it for a whole game is the question mark, and I don't even know that the coaches would ask them to do that, because I think it can compromise some other things, and it's going to put these guys in a vulnerable position, especially last week. That was a big physical defensive front they were tangling with, doing well for
Mahonkers.
About a half. Mahonkers, my favorite word. But I think that was the issue, and can they sustain it? I want to flip it to the defensive side, though, Mary Kay, and talk about Jabal Sheard, because I think this team has missed him more than people know. I think this guy, for all the publicity that's been out there for the offseason moves of bringing in Paul Kruger, bringing in Desmond Bryant, drafting Barkevious Mingo, you sort of, I'm not going to say it was lost, but this guy clearly was playing some great football and probably the best of that defensive front. And then you took him out of there, and you've noticed the running game, the you know, the defense against the run and so forth, were lacking.
Well, first of all, you have to consider a couple of things happened three things happened all at once, basically. You lost Quentin Groves. You lost Jabal Sheard. You lost Billy Winn. So you have a defensive front that is built upon funneling guys in there, rotating guys, keeping everybody fresh, so that you have so much energy when it comes time to rush the passer because you haven't been in there 92% of the snaps. What's happened is Paul Kruger's been in there 92%, and Barkevious Mingo has been in there for 92% of the snaps. So you haven't had that influx of new energy all the time that you had to have. And look at even Billy Winn. I mean, I think when you take a Billy Winn out of the lineup too, that's sure. just another kind of dynamic. I mean, he's just a hustle, play to the whistle kind of a guy. So,
right.
Yes, Jabal Sheard was playing lights out, and you know, there's just no question about it. The play that he went out on, you know, he was in the midst of forcing a fumble. So.
He was playing great in that game against the Vikings.
He had a couple of big plays. He had a strip sack in that game as well. So, yes, he was playing really well. But I think it's a combination of all those three guys being out, and that's why you haven't seen perhaps the sack production that you want to be getting right now from a Paul Kruger.
Yeah.
And the other thing to consider, Barkevious Mingo, even though he's done some really great things, he missed a whole month with a bruised lung. And then he gets thrown into the lineup, and he's learning on the fly.
Right. He's not polished yet. Talent-wise, he's off the charts, and his explosiveness is unbelievable. But it's polished. And Jordan Cameron wasn't a starter before this year. These guys need to get their reps. A lot of these young guys have unbelievable talent, and now it's about refining that talent and getting to the next level.
No doubt. Mary-Kay, thank you. That was great. We appreciate it. We always love having you on here. She, again, Mary-Kay Cabot from Cleveland.com. Check out her work there. Follow her on Twitter, at Mary-Kay Cabot, Cleveland Plain Dealer as well. All of this analysis, we will bring more to it to the table. Your calls, 216-578-0850. We've got some people on the line, so we want to get to your calls and your tweets at Browns_Daily. It's Vic and Nathan, Football Wednesday, ESPN 850 WKNR.